hate you some.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the sentiments of that song we're playing now is how most of us feel when we talk about politics sometimes. I think I'd rather be traveling. But I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome here, and you're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 80.9 FM, Voice of Community. And that, of course, is That's All I Want by the great Joni Mitchell, who was inducted into Canada's Juno Hall of Fame on this day in 1981, one of our great folk singers in this hemisphere. So today we are going to talk about the Governor Hogan's State of the State address, which he gave yesterday, where he announced all manner of things. He stayed far away from transportation, one thing we noticed in yesterday's, which was predicted on this program by Greg Klein and others, that this would not become one of the conversations. He did talk about taxes, manufacturing. He talked about stormwater management fees and the Bay, which we'll be getting into. We talked about education, which is where we'll start, and other issues, especially around not taxing certain pensions and not taxing and dropping the tax, property taxes, on small businesses and what all that means for the state, and his proclamations about the state being in bad shape and the really kind of in some ways vicious comeback from Mike Miller, who really attacked him in a very visceral and political sense, and a more measured response that came from Speaker Bush. So the battle is on. And we are joined here in studio today by Greg Klein, who's an attorney, co-founder and contributing editor for Red Maryland, host of the Conservative Refugee Podcast, and co-host of Red Maryland Radio. I always tell him these days, you know, it has to have the Refugee Podcast, just to be the Conservative
Podcast.
That's
right. That's right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you, Greg. You're not a refugee anymore. Dr. John Bullock's in studio, professor of political science at Towson University, who was a candidate for city council in the last election. Adam Jackson joins us, CEO of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, joined by phone. Adam, good to have you with us as well. And Catalina Bird is in the studio, media consultant, political strategist, and co-host of No Hooks for the Hip Hop Chronicles on WEAA, which you can hear every night at midnight.
Yes.
With her co-host, Jared Ball. There we go. Welcome to have you all here. You all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here, talk@steinershow.org. You can also tweet me at Mark Steiner, but call 410-319-8888. And reminding you, on the way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com. or at steinershow.org, MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner is there. So, good to have you all here. And folks, do join us, 410-319-8888. Before we play a clip, we'll start with education. Let me get your overall assessment of that speech, starting with our phone guest, Adam Jackson.
Well, generally speaking, I was disappointed in the way he started it off, because he kind of started it off like an election speech. You know, like he was still trying to be elected, extremely negative, talking about the economy, talking about the way the state of Maryland in general. And it's one of those things where I think it's kind of showing kind of way ahead of time he's really not prepared. I don't really think he's that prepared to be governor of Maryland. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not really – when I look at the election results and I look at the way that Brown ran his campaign and stuff, it's one of those things where – he became governor by default. It was anti-O'Malley, anti-Brown sentiment that made Larry Hogan governor. And the way he started that speech, it's like you don't start off a speech about Maryland and its economy by starting off everything negative, making everything about, like, it's like you're still trying to win an election. You have to run it like a governor. So to me, it kind of just showed his naivety running into his first year as being governor.
Greg Klein, I think it's
I had a little different take.
Yeah. I would imagine, yeah. Yes.
This was a speech. One of his staffers said afterward, "This was a speech to the people of Maryland, not so much to the legislators." But I think the message that he sent very clearly. I thought it was a great speech, and yes, it was the same things he talked about on the campaign trail. And he does talk about the challenges that we face in Maryland because, as he pointed out, if we've ever needed a dose of honesty, it's right now, and that's what he gave. I think the message that he sent, and I think some of the reaction that we'll talk to, that it engendered, is, you know, right after the election, I think the Democrats who've had such a monopoly on power for so long were convincing themselves as much as everybody else that this was a fluke, that he's, you know, Larry Hogan's going to come to us, that we're not really going to see a lot of change here. We're all going to get along. There was some of that, which I always knew was very fragile and was never going to last. What Larry Hogan did yesterday, he did with the budget that he proposed and with his speech yesterday, was to say very clearly, when I said that I was going to do these things, I was serious, and I'm going to do them. This is what we're going to do. And he made it very clear that his program focused primarily on what he campaigned on and what he got elected on, which was controlling state spending and rolling back as many of those 40 tax increases over the last 8 years as he possibly can, that is his agenda, and he's moving forward with that. And I think I'm still amazed, and I think I'm even hearing some of it this morning, that Democrats are surprised that he's actually going to do what he said he was going to do, and he is.
Tom Bullock.
I think it was very interesting listening to the speech, and it did sound very much similar to things he said on the campaign trail, right? So he ran on taxes and spending and job growth and things like that. And a lot of the speech still contained a lot of those slogans, not as many specifics as you might have liked, but then he did get into some of the ways that he would like to push his agenda forward. You mentioned education, and that was one that I think that stuck out to a lot of people across the state. And on one hand, he'll say that, you know, this is record investment in education, right? I mean, that are $16 million more than was slated or more than in the last year. But at the same time, we're also talking about less money overall, right? So again, we have more students that are going to be needing that funding. And also we're looking at the funding formulas and the fact that that it hasn't grown or the funding hasn't grown at the same rate that the population of students is growing, and also the needs for places like Baltimore City that are going to be losing $35.5 million that was slated for their budget. Again, you could think about also things like stormwater management that I know we'll talk about later. I think the thing that is important for us to all keep in mind as we listen to these speeches and even think about the legislative agenda in Annapolis is that, you know, we have to look at our budget, our taxes and services. They're all connected, and those cuts are going to be felt especially when we talk about state workers as well. So I think there was a lot of some ideas that came out. But again, there's going to be some pushback, and it's going to be a while to see what happens there.
Catalina Byrd.
Well, first of all great statesmen aren't all great orators. And so he's not necessarily the most dynamic speech giver, which means that you should listen to the words. And, you know, it's kind of weird to listen to people say he sounds like he's still on the campaign trail, when one of the biggest things that makes people apathetic in politics is people run on one thing and then come in and get elected and do another. But because this guy's a Republican, it's, oh, I can't believe he's still talking. He's in campaign mode. He ran and is doing the things that he ran on, as Greg stated. There was an energy in there that was so hostile when you watched it.
And where?
In the chamber. He was delivering. A lot of people were listening on the stream, but just to see, it was almost exactly like the State of the Union, how the Republicans didn't clap for the president. The Democrats sat there stone-faced. They wouldn't even acknowledge the things that we should be able to agree on, like transportation, not siphoning money out of one fund to make up for something else, no more deficit spending. Nobody would budge on anything, and I thought that was really disheartening, considering that he's come in very humble from the beginning and said he'll work with anyone and wants to work with everyone, and they didn't look like they want to do any work at all.
You know, folks, do join us here at 410-319-8888 when you hear your thoughts on yesterday's speech, and I think that I think you are seeing something being set up here. I made a quip the other week on the show that as we're talking about Democrats and Republicans in the state of Maryland. Democrats seem to want to have a number of programs that they think are beneficial for the state, for the community, and the environment, but they don't want to figure out a way to pay for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Republicans don't think they're necessary and refuse to pay for it. So I think that there's a, you know, and I think that there's a divide, and now we're seeing, I think, Greg Klein from the party represent, a Republican who's saying just that.
Well, I think I don't think from the Republican perspective, I don't think it's as dramatic as that. I mean, what we're saying, what the governor has done, the most dramatic thing the governor has done with the budget is he said we're not going to have these built-in increases that we know we can't afford. And that's something he talked about in the speech. We had these baseline spending numbers that we know we've been making budgets for over a decade. And when he says over a decade, he's including Bob Ehrlich in that as well. He's saying we made budgets that we knew we couldn't pay for, and we're not going to do that anymore. So from his perspective, it's not that he doesn't want to fund government, because he's actually spending more money overall in the state budget than was spent last year. But we're going to only grow it to a pace that's sustainable. So we're going to have balance today. We're going to have balance tomorrow. We're going to wipe out this idea of a structural deficit, and we're not going to go back to that as long as he's governor. So it's not that he doesn't want to fund those things. And when you talked about education funding our priorities, he made tough decisions. But he, you know, it. We have this debate, which I think we all predicted was going to happen. We're spending more on education than any other governor has ever spent. And all we hear in the media is that there's cuts. And I think most Marylanders see, and one of the things that the governor talked about was that disconnect. And when he goes out and talks to people, this is one of those things that the people who've been running Annapolis for so long are disconnected from the voters out there, because it's hard for folks who are paying taxes and trying to balance their budget to understand why the government should always have 5% more a year when we don't have the money to pay for it.
John Bullock, go ahead. Then we'll go to other guests, phones.
I think you make the point in terms of, you know, Democratic priorities, Republican priorities in terms of how things are paid for. But a couple of things that are worth keeping in mind. Again, you know, you can look at the fact of whether it's education formulas that, you know, we're looking at about $144 million statewide less than will be mandated. And the fact is this. It costs more if you think about the time value of money, right? We think about things about inflation, right? What you could buy with a dollar last year and 10 years ago is different, okay? It's less. And so even not even just with education, but think about even state workers. I happen to be a state worker for the University System of Maryland, and recently a cost of living adjustment. Had not had cost of living adjustments for years, right? People's food, expenses, all those things go up. And so just as those expenses increase, we also need to increase the people's compensation, not only to schools, but also to employees. But again, this idea that, well, we can't have these automatic increases, some of that is problematic, again, as things become more expensive as people move on. And when we talk about families, there seemed to be this also disconnect in this speech between, thinking about small business, which is great in terms of supporting small business, but also think about our state workers and think about our educators and our teachers and everyone else who is also in this boat as well. And it's also going to be affected by these kinds of cuts, or at least reductions, or at least not spending to the same degree that we would expect given the growth.
But you got a cost of living increase and you hadn't had any in years. And the budget has said that it's not going to require any furloughs or layoffs. So, I mean, and which didn't happen under Glenn Denning, which they've been doing furlough days for the last 4 years under O'Malley's budget. I really think it's the messenger more than the message, because as a state, and I'm a former state employee, and I was laid off once on my birthday due to a hiring freeze and a budget freeze as a contractual person. So knowing what you all have gone through as state employees and how you kind of bear the brunt of this poor management of the budget. And it was bleak what he laid out, but it was the truth. We've been spending what we don't have. And I don't even think anyone would mind the taxes if you got something for it. But the revenue is then mismanaged, and your services have continued to decrease. Your quality of life and education and work environment has continued to decline, and your taxes still go up.
Adam, before we hit the phones and play this clip on education.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's interesting about the whole education debate about the cuts, you know, first off, cuts are inevitable. With any state government as big as Maryland, you know, cuts are inevitable. But the problem with the education conversation is that Democrats have constantly had this conversation in the terms of fiscal responsibility and throwing money at the schools and whatnot. But the problem is we haven't talked about where that money goes and where that money gets allocated and what we're actually going to do about education in Maryland. Because one of the things that I do agree with Hogan about is that spending is out of control, especially when you talk about education. Because one thing that Democrats and the left in Maryland don't do, we don't talk about the contracts that nonprofits and foundations get, for example, for education contracts, and how those types of arrangements with the government that drain the budget. And so what we should be talking about is public investment in communities and how we can actually have control over the things that affect our lives and the things that happen in our communities. But the problem is that with the past two terms, we had a governor where we've had where Democrats have basically agreed that we want to increase spending without figuring out a way to increase revenue to offset those things. And we've always engaged in like structural deficit, you know, on a state level. But the problem is that we're not talking about the ways that the money that the money's being allocated and how we're actually going to make that money effective for education. And so and what I think is a call for Democrats to do is to actually be progressive in the state of Maryland, because we've like there's too much of a range of Democrats in this state, because there's fiscal conservatives who are Democrats, and then there's also on the other side of the aisle who are Republicans. And the problem is that Democrats haven't been really been called to atone and to actually be accountable for the decisions they've been making with the budget on the state level. And so I think that that's probably a deeper conversation that we just need, that the Democrats are going to be forced to have, because the cuts, like cuts are inevitable. It's like, it's not, I mean, I would like for education to be fully funded the way it was last year, but cuts are inevitable and you have to balance the budget. That's the job of any governor. So I'm not really tripping off of Hogan for that. I'm more concerned about where that money's allocated and what we're going to be doing in the long term.
So let me open the phones here, and then I'm going to play this education clip so we can talk about that. And I do want to jump into this whole question of tax cuts and get into the questions about the Chesapeake Bay as well. 410-319-8888. Reverend Merrick, you're on the air.
Good morning, all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was completely not surprised by the governor's speech. I mean, if anybody has had two ears to the wall, they would know that. But what I was dismayed is the behavior of the majority party in the General Assembly. At this point, the people elected Governor Hogan. We know that, right? So it would behoove the majority party not to be so angry and so bellicose in their tone. Learn how to work with this guy. He's going to be there for 4 years. And truthfully, if people are discussing with partisanship on a federal level, they definitely don't want it on a state level. And we just can't afford that. Lives are on the line here, and we really need to get down to the business of learning how to cooperate. Yes, there are going to be disagreements, but it doesn't have to be disrespectful, and it doesn't have to be ingenuous. Get over that your guy lost, stop being sore losers, and get to work. That's why you were elected, and do the job we elected you to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Merrick. Good to hear from you. I think this is an interesting commentary here on where we are with all this. And let me go now to this clip on education from Governor Larry Hogan's State of the State address.
Education is our top priority. In our proposed budget, we spend more money on education than ever before. We fund K-12 education at record levels, and we have committed over $290 million to school construction. And this is the first time in history that any administration has provided additional supplemental funding for education through GCEI in their first year. We have some great schools here in Maryland, but the gap between the best and the worst schools is dramatic. I believe that every child in Maryland deserves a world-class education, regardless of what neighborhood they grow up in. We must fix our underperforming schools while also giving parents and children realistic and better alternatives. So let's expand families' choices. Let's encourage more public charter schools to open and operate in Maryland.
So let's take a couple of things here and talk a bit about this. And folks, please join us at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts. I think that, and I pushed Governor Hogan on this at our Annapolis summit last Friday. Because, yes, there's more money being spent, but the geographic cost of education was dropped by $68.1 million, and then he decided not to give the inflation increase, which dropped another $75.9 million from schools. And that cut is real, and that cut means if you could either mean several thousand teachers could be laid off or the equivalent money being cut from school budgets for contract employees, transportation, wherever that money has to come from, it's being taken out. So it's true, more money is being spent because you had to spend it because it was part, whenever you have more students, you have to put more money into the education system, which is what any elected governor would have had to have done, as well as Governor Hogan. So it is that. So there's that is going to be a big battle line drawn here. And the other is about charter schools. And we've had a lot of discussions and debates on charter schools, and there's some incredible charter schools. Baltimore has more than any other part of the state of Maryland. There are some incredibly powerful charter schools like City Neighbors and others that do an incredible job with people. And then there are charter schools that are horrible, and that there are incredible public schools and that are not charter schools, and public schools that are just failing our students. So the question is it so the soup part question here, can we be honest that we're cutting money from education, A, and whatever the argument is why we should or should not do that, and B, that charter schools, by all the studies, have not shown that they're any better than public schools. So how do we wrestle with those issues? Mm-hmm. What are we really saying to each other and saying to the system? Greg?
Well, I think there's a couple issues there. You talk about the budget cutting. I think one of the things that from a Republican point of view, from a lot of the folks who supported Larry Hogan, was we've constantly had more and more money pumped into this education bureaucracy in the state. And even though we hear about how the schools are number one or were number one, one of the things that we've talked about at Red Maryland and have chronicled for years is there's been – Maryland has one of the biggest achievement gaps in the country. And it has continued. And if just throwing more state money at it would solve the problem, and the same thing with the environment. If just throwing more money at it would solve the problem, a lot of us think the problem would have been solved by now. So what Larry Hogan is saying is same thing he's going to be talking about when we get to the Chesapeake Bay. Let's look at doing something different than what we've been doing. And he talks about charter schools. We do have charter schools, and there'll be debates about how effective they are. But we also have one of the weakest charter school laws in the country. And giving that more of a chance, giving more, especially in communities where you have these achievement gaps, giving more alternatives, more choice, is something different than we've done in the past, where we've had the influence of interest groups, the teachers' unions, who kind of prevented that sort of thing. It's a different approach than just saying, let's raise taxes and throw more money at it. And I think that's one of the things that Larry Hogan was elected to try to do things differently.
We're going to take a very brief break. Come right back and let our other guests kind of jump right into this education debate, their thoughts on this, your thoughts at 410-319-8888 as we analyze Governor Hogan's State of the State address. And on our way to break here on the Mark Sanner Show, we're hearing Gracias a la Vida by Violeta Parra, who died on this day in 1967, one of our great songwriter poets. We'll be right back.
Que en todo su ancho graba noche y día grillos y canarios martillos turbinas ladridos chubasco.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, Bobby Brown. That's Every Little Step. On this day in 1969, this is the Mark Steiner Show here on I'm sorry. It's all my guests in the room just dancing here. We have to come back. And your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 80.9 FM, the voice of the community. So there we are. Bobby Brown's not a guest, but
it's his birthday.
Huh?
It's his birthday.
It is his birthday. He was born on this day in 1969. How do people – anyway, I'm going to stop right there. Greg Klein is with us, Dr. John Bullock, Adam Jackson, Catalina Bird, and you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. So let's get back in the education a bit. You were about to say what, John?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and tie a couple pieces together. People mentioned sort of the partisan feel of what was happening, and granted, it looked like the Democrats were not very happy about it, but I think it also had to do with the tone of the speech, and I think coming off talking about, and I have a whole bunch of, I was just listening and just writing down all these quotes, but some of them around changing from business as usual, not the same, tax and spend, and I think that rubbed people the wrong way. So I think from the beginning there was that piece there. But it's, on one hand, it's hard to say that education's your top priority, and then at the same time you do have those cuts that are real. But it seemed like a lot of the energy for the speech was really around tax cuts. I mean, so he talks a lot about small businesses. He talked about, or if you look at the signs in our state, Maryland's open for business. So it seems as if the business climate, economic development, that is his main priority. Not necessarily education. Again, I'm not saying that he's anti-education, but again, these cuts are really going to have a dramatic impact. But I do understand, again, we have to have a budget that makes sense. We have to make decisions that are going to help us down the road. But again, if you want to invest in education, this isn't exactly doing that.
What's wrong, Kelly? Why are you scrunching up your face?
Because it's almost essentially monopoly money. The cuts aren't tangible. the money that's going to be spent is going to be allocated. And Adam touched on it before we went to break and why he's not as upset. And the same reason I'm not as upset with the cuts per se is because there's been no oversight in how it's spent once it goes into the budget. We lose millions of dollars in the city, in our school system, and nobody ever cares where it went. They don't go looking for it. We report on it for a couple of weeks, and then I can't lose a couple hundred dollars and not go find it. I can't afford to do that, but we have watched it happen consistently. And then to Greg's point, as far as charter schools, I'm not as big a fan of charter schools. I am vouchers, but I am, as a parent, a fan of alternative options for education. And we know that there have been some poorly performing public schools, and with more oversight and a strengthening of what our compliance laws are in terms of how charter schools operate here, we can remedy that situation quicker than trying to create a new system or create vouchers. So I'm for all expansion of education in terms of alternatives and options, because there's some really great charter schools here.
No, I agree.
And some really bad ones.
I'm on the board of a charter school, and one that has gotten its charter renewed and is doing quite well in West Baltimore. But at the same time, those charter schools are also going to feel the impact because they're also public schools as well. But I think in terms of the conversation, in terms of cuts, in terms of choice, those are very much a Republican, talking points. But also, it's some principled things that they believe in, and that came out in a speech.
Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that generally speaking, I think there's too much demagoguery surrounding Larry Hogan, like, because he's a Republican. And generally speaking, with the education, because I feel like, these conversations, like, Mark O'Malley cut the budget for education back in 2009 for education, and people didn't really bat an eye. And the thing is, just because Larry Hogan is elected Republican in the state of Maryland doesn't mean Democrats seem to lose their mind and, like, make all these public shots at him because, he's trying to balance the budget as the governor of the state . So I think, generally speaking, people need to cut it out. Democrats need to get over it and move forward and figure out how to make the budget, how to work with Larry Hogan to make the budget better. But generally speaking, like we were talking about charter schools, I mean, charter schools in Baltimore, for example, like, the one thing that's interesting about Baltimore is that if it was true that, charter schools and nonprofits and, like, private investment and private equity and things like that would significantly make the education system better, then Baltimore should be a hub for revolution, for education revolution in this country. Because the thing is, we have millions and millions of dollars that are spent in private sectors here in the city to invest in education. But a lot of those things happen through government contracts, and they disappear, and they're not accountable to the community, and they're not accountable to us. And so, and in Annapolis, a running joke is that Baltimore is the black hole, that we spend all this money on education, and no one's accountable for where it goes or what it's spent on. And what my argument would be is that a lot of that money goes into the hands of white nonprofits and white-run foundations, because that money is taken out of the community, taken out of the government's hands, and put in the pockets of individuals and their interests. And so the conversation, and this is why I agree with Greg, I think that this will force us to actually be accountable for the money that we spend and to decrease state spending overall. Because, I don't think the Republicans have necessarily a better policy analysis than Democrats, really. And I don't really think Democrats have a structural analysis on racism and white supremacy. So I'm not anyone's Republican cheerleader here. But I'm just saying, if we're going to talk about fiscal responsibility, and Democrats need to be we need to increase intellectual acuity surrounding our addressing education funding and where it goes, and Baltimore specifically.
I'm going to play a clip here about taxes here in a moment in manufacturing before we get to stormwater issues in the Bay. But I hear what you're saying, Adam, as well, and I think it would be interesting to kind of really probe that idea. The idea you're saying that the money goes to nonprofits, that may be true. The reality is I don't know the facts, and I don't know if that's true or not. I do know that that's possibly true. I do know that there are a lot of foundations in town that back a number of charter schools in the city, and that private enterprises back a number of charter schools in the city. It's a very complex situation. I think that needs to be looked at, and I think that...
But that's the conversation Democrats haven't been having. The conversation that Democrats have been doing, like what O'Malley was able to do was to build these things as private-public partnerships and to spend all this money through government contracts. Because if you look through some of the line items, these things are like $500,000 here, $1 million here, and it goes to individual organizations most of the time. But those organizations are not accountable to anyone. It's just that money just disappears into whatever that organization spends that money on.
Right.
And that's what I think, that's what Democrats are talking about. And I feel like Hogan sees that, and he's trying to figure out ways to decrease spending. But I feel like that's where Democrats have to start really being more hard-hitting, is looking at the budget that way.
So let me play this piece of the unless anybody has a comment on this further. I'm gonna go into this cut from the speech that Larry Hogan made about taxes and manufacturing. Let's hear this.
But while our assets are many and our people are strong and hopeful, their state is simply not as strong as it could be or as it should be. We have a lot to do to get Maryland back on track and working again. The challenges we face are great. High taxes, overregulation, and an anti-business attitude are clearly the cause of our economic problems. Our economy is floundering, and too many Marylanders have been struggling just to get by. 40 consecutive tax hikes have taken an additional $10 billion out of the pockets of struggling Maryland families and small businesses. We've lost more than 8,000 businesses, and Maryland's unemployment has nearly doubled. We're number 3 in the nation in foreclosures and dead last in manufacturing. We've had the largest mass exodus of taxpayers fleeing our state of any state in our region and one of the worst in the nation. And while most states around the country have turned the corner, sadly, Maryland continues to languish behind. The federal government ranked our state's economy 49th out of 50 states. That is simply unacceptable.
So let's tackle some of the things we just heard here. I mean, I heard Larry Hogan say this, and I challenged him on some of these things when he was in the studio, when he was running for governor, and Democrats had another side, and I challenged Lieutenant Governor Brown and his, because both of them we can use statistics to make our argument, and none of them are absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right?
It's possible.
Right. So we play these games. We're not dead last in the United States. We haven't lost more businesses than the other states have lost. A lot of the problems with Baltimore and Virginia, by the way, which is only half a point percent of Maryland, ahead of Maryland is because of the proximity to the federal government and the spillover from the federal government and what we've lost because we've been a state, as Virginia has been, that relies on not federal largesse, but on federal employees and contractors.
Too much.
Only too much because of where we are. But that's an ideological question. But
yeah,
it's not
right.
necessarily where we're like dead last, Greg.
Right.
Plus,
well,
you know, NAFTA, people don't understand that we don't make anything in America in the way that we did 15, 20 years
anywhere
ago.
Anywhere in America,
it's not just Maryland. So there's some disingenuous.
We have no manufacturing
right.
left.
Right.
Right.
I know there was an economic
and technological shift that's happening in America, right? We moved away to a more industrial or informational economy. I mean, that's
I think there is a fair point that Maryland isn't doing as well as other states with all of those same conditions going on. We're not having the job growth they see in other states, even in the region, but certainly in places like Texas or other places where you've seen them turn around from the economy and doing much better. A lot of these statistics, and I know there was some quibbling and there was something in the Sun about the manufacturing. Is it really dead last? We're 7th from the bottom. But the point, yeah, I mean, if that's the argument you want to make, I mean, I think you're missing the point. The point is that we have especially a private sector economy that is not performing as well as we need it to and hasn't rebounded from the recession the way that other states in the region and nationally have. And yes, there's a challenge of what's going to happen coming out of Washington, but that's why it's more important. This is something Larry Hogan's been talking about since he began Change Maryland 4 years ago. That's why it's so important that we fuel that private sector growth and improve that and turn this thing around. It's interesting, and I can understand Democrats who've been running the state for the last 8 years and longer not being real happy that someone comes in and says, we have all these problems, because they've been trying to spin it the other way for the last 8 years. But the reality is, one of the reasons Larry Hogan won is because most Marylanders who went out and voted tend to agree that we're not where we need to be. And so I think that was important for him to point out, because it's not just him saying, oh, we're a terrible state. He's saying, we have challenges. Here are the solutions. So I thought it was ultimately very positive that we can turn those things around. I can understand that they're not happy about that, and they're not going
to
applaud.
They need to grow
that.
Up and put their big boy and big girl pants on. I mean, truth is hard and hurts, but you perpetuated this, and You have to take, just own up to it. Own up to it and come to the table and want to fix something.
Well, look, I'll say this. You know, clearly Larry Hogan is not this, you know, far right-wing Republican that some people may make him out to be. And I think there may be some wiggle room and there may be some compromise room on one issue, right? If you look at, think back to the Democratic primary, there was one candidate, Doug Ganser, who was talking about reducing the corporate tax rate, right? And so there are some Democrats who have thought about that and recognized that may be some place where you can have some commonality. But at the same time, I think there's this emphasis on the private sector, which is important as part of our growth. But also, and you talked about manufacturing earlier, but look at the drivers of the state of Maryland, and even this region. You think about healthcare, education, technology. Those are the kinds of things that are going to need investments at the institutions of higher education, which are also getting cut. You think about our elementary and secondary schools that are also going to be receiving less funds. But again, we have to be mindful of the future. And I think that also plays into what we talk about in terms of the gas tax and using some of those things in terms of funding transportation projects and mass transit. But then also looking at our environment, right? So how are we going to be stewards of our environment? So it's important, yes, to make those fiscal decisions, but and some tough decisions. At the same time, we have to be forward thinking and thinking about our environment and thinking about the legacy we leave our children and our grandchildren.
Well, I think that is part of what he's talking about. I don't think we're actually cutting higher education. He's actually spending more.
Well, our university budget has decreased 2% across the university system of Maryland, 2% reduction.
So the natural rise that would have kept it even have been cut. I mean, they've not been implemented. So that is a cut.
We have this argument. You know, and that's one of the things that's frustrating for most citizens. When you see the budget getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and all you hear is the word cut, it's a little frustrating, especially when you're the person who has to fund it. You know, the tax cuts that he's talking about with regard to the private property, he's not talking about cutting the corporate tax rate. He's talking about giving a break. And he talked about the first $10,000 of private. These are really small businesses that he's talking about giving tax relief to through that and trying to engender that. And he talked about businesses that are leaving. It's important because if we're going to turn things around, if we're going to be able to fund government with our current tax structure or fund any future tax relief, we're going to have private sector job growth because we can't depend on Washington's largesse to continue to bail us out either through continued spending coming out of Washington or some literal bailout. That's not going to happen anymore. So that's been something he's been talking about as well.
So, Adam, have a thought on this before I probe this a bit more? Am I going to hear another cut, another take, I should say?
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm good.
Pardon?
Well, he's good.
He said he was good.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm good.
Okay, I got you.
I have to agree with Greg and kind of disagree with John a bit. I think you're partial to education spending because you're an educator. But, we spend a lot of money to educate people who, of our generation, millennials especially, graduate with a bunch of student loans and can't get any jobs, which is why the coupling of the private sector job growth that we are seeing and focused on is so important, because all of us can't then graduate and turn back and come back and be academics. All of us can't be state and federal employees. Everybody doesn't even want to be, and that's not what everybody gets educated on. And it solves long-term forward thinking to a degree our employment problem, because the state can't keep creating positions to create jobs for people. But I know that Marylanders will put other Marylanders back to work if they had some relief as businesses grow.
Let me kind of push back a little bit on some of those ideas. Because I kind of look at some of this sometimes and think that neither Democrats nor Republicans have an answer to any of these things we're facing. And that you know, when you look at the job growth, let's say in a state like Texas, the majority of those jobs, and they've been huge, one of those jobs are very low-paying jobs. They're not high-paying jobs. They're not jobs with benefits. They're not jobs that come with any security. So that seems to be the wave of the future. And we're not figuring out a way to make secure jobs in this economy, no matter who it seems to be in charge. The reality is, I think we live in the state of Maryland, which does where everything from cybersecurity, which I have some issues with, but cybersecurity is one of the growth industries in the world. And Maryland is poised to be at top of that. But that's all tied to the higher education system. Mm-hmm. And I might add to the federal government on some levels. Mm-hmm. And the other part is in health, which is the biggest employer in the state of Maryland, is the health industry between Johns Hopkins, NIH, University of Maryland, and all the rest. It's the biggest single employer of any one area. So, I mean, there are issues here. And the question is, you raise the issues of student loans. Mm-hmm. we're about to see a rise because budgets are cut. That means there's going to be a rise in tuition.
Right.
A rise in tuition means students go greater, into greater debt. And Kurt Schmoke has made beat President Obama to the punch by suggesting that we should have free community college as a way to kind of push things. I'm just saying, I guess what I'm saying in some ways here, Greg Klein and everybody in the studio, is I'm not sure that either party are coming up with ideas that really speak to how to save the future of the state or the country.
Well, I think some, maybe not the entire future, but some of the more immediate things. You know, it, when you talk about higher education, that's an issue. And then we didn't talk a lot about that in the speech or how we're going to approach it.
Right.
But, you know, again, the assumption that if you don't get enough money from the state that you're going to have to raise tuition. I mean, at some point, we have to deal with the very real factor that there's been in this inflation in education costs that is unsustainable. I mean, you know, we build cathedrals for schools now, and it's just becoming unaffordable for kids who, I was lucky enough to go to have a public Maryland college education that was pretty affordable for my parents, who are working class people, to be able to afford. We're getting away from that, and that's not just, you know, there's an affordability issue that doesn't really seem to be being addressed. That's at the heart of that. You know, again, just throwing more and more money at it doesn't seem to be the solution either. As far as the changing economy, all of those things are factors, and I don't know that there is any magical solution. But the point is, what we've been doing really hasn't seemed to been working compared to what other folks are doing. So we need to go in a little bit different direction.
I agree that the answer is not throwing money at any particular issue. But again, we have to think about things that cost money, right? So I'm at Towson University. It's the fastest growing institution in the state. We've gone from 21,000, 22,000, right? We're getting more and more students. My classes are full. Students can't get into my classes. People who are paying tuition, again, because we don't have enough professors. We can't hire enough professors because, again, we don't have the money to do so. We have hiring freezes. We have cost of living, all those kinds of things, right? So you can't. So when people say, well, we're going to do more with less, no, you do less with less, right? Again, it's important to recognize that there's a cost attached to all these things, but I definitely get the point that, again, we do have to, you know, to look at our budgets, be wise. But again, these are also investments. You talk about cathedrals being built. Again, we're talking about classrooms, right? If you look at even Baltimore City public schools with the oldest and most outdated equipment in classrooms, you can't have a 21st century education without having the proper facilities and the proper investment.
Let me take another cut here, and I think if you want to look at what a 21st century school looks like and what it costs, you just got to go over to East Baltimore and look at the school that was built by Johns Hopkins for their employees and a few of the residents who live in that community when you want to see what a state-of-the-art school looks like. But can we pay for that is the question. Are we willing to pay for that is another question. Let's see this next clip. This is the clip that is going to cause some of the biggest battles, I think, inside the state legislature, and it is around the stormwater runoff fee, popularly known in political debates as the rain tax.
Third, dealing with the problem of stormwater management and working to restore our most treasured asset, the Chesapeake Bay, is a goal that we all strongly agree on. Governor Glendening with the early clap. Thank you, Governor. But in my humble opinion, passing a state law that forced certain counties to raise taxes on their citizens against their will may not have been the best way to address this issue. And if there was one message that Marylanders have made perfectly clear, it was that taxing struggling and already overtaxed Marylanders for the rain that falls on the roof of their homes was a mistake which needs to be corrected. This week, our administration will submit legislation to repeal the rain tax.
Now, that will be a big political fight on the floor of the state legislature, as it was when it first went in, the whole stormwater fee, runoff fee. And so let's talk a bit about that. I mean, this is, you know, we talk about the Bay. There's a stormwater runoff fee. The phosphorus management tool was taken off the table by Hogan. Though I argue, and I'll argue this again, that it was taken off the table really by Governor Martin O'Malley, who made it a regulation knowing that it wouldn't – obviously would not go into effect because Governor Hogan was going to come into office before the Maryland Registrar, where it has to sit for 10 days had that 10-day period. Right. I think because Purdue's very powerful politically, and they didn't want this, and the farmers who voted for Hogan didn't want this, and so this, from a number of levels, this was taken away, even though I think the Governor Hogan was wrong on one level here when we talked about this at the Annapolis Summit, when he said that there was everybody wasn't at the table. That just wasn't true, that when this phosphorus management tool was created, everyone was at the table. Farmers were there. Chicken industry was there. Environmentalists were there. Politicians were there. Everybody was at the table when they came to this agreement. To say they weren't, it just wasn't true. And that's what everybody's trying to say. I don't know why they are remaking history, but
I guess it just depends on what table you're talking
about. No, the table that made up the PMT, everybody was there and signed off on it. The Chicken Council was there. The poultry growers were there. Purdue was there. Environmentalists. Everybody was there. And they said, this is going to be the tool. All of a sudden, it wasn't the tool.
That was a lot of synonyms for chicken in one sentence.
Well, we do a lot of chicken on this show.
And chicken what?
Anyway, let's go back to Stormwater. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, we'll go back to, I mean, he did say that he's going to revisit, and they may end up doing the same thing. That's right. Something else that you pointed out.
Right.
But again, he's going to go back and make sure and work to find a consensus on that. And if that was the consensus, maybe that's what they'll end up doing. And you can make that point as well. But when it comes to this rain tax,
yeah.
First off, it's an incredibly unpopular tax, and Larry Hogan ran on repealing it, and it was for him not to come in here and try to repeal it, I think would have been a huge mistake, and he wasn't not going to do that. Secondly, the way that it was passed and the way that it was implemented, we can talk about the need for stormwater management. I don't think you're going to get a lot of arguing about that. Certainly no one's going to argue that we need to clean up the bay, but for the state of Maryland to pass a law that mandates that 10 counties have to impose a tax on their own citizens to fund these things, and when counties say, no, wait a minute, let's do a de minimis fee like they did in Frederick or Carroll County, we'll fund it through general, let us make our budgets, we'll fund this stuff, but we'll find another way, to then threaten them at one point to sue them for not imposing a tax, I think is just horrible policymaking. And it's a horrible way to approach this. Even if you agree with the ends of it, it was heavy-handed. It was worse than just an unfunded mandate. And I think it should be repealed because it's bad policy. If the state believes this money should be spent, they should find a way to fund it themselves. If they want to mandate that counties fund it, as much as I would be opposed to an unfunded mandate, at least give the counties the flexibility to figure out how they're going to do that. So what we have now should be gotten rid of. And I think, again, it will be debated, but if the Democrats in the legislature ultimately block the repeal of the rain tax, it's to their political detriment, I think.
They'll be giving Larry Hogan a second term if they do that. The greatest standing ovation I saw all year was Charles Lawler, as the only Republican candidate who came to the Bridge Forum at Israel Baptist Church, get a standing ovation over the rain tax, over top of all three Democratic primary, because neither Mazur, Gansler, or Brown would say that they would repeal it. And churches, and people aren't understanding the small businesses and the nonprofits that are impacted by it as well. It was a bad, not only was the way it was imposed wrong, but who it impacts is too.
We have like 3 minutes left, so I just want to give everybody a chance to get in here to John and go to Adam.
Interesting enough, I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be a Democrat and happens to have a nonprofit in the city and said something very similar to both our past guests just said and having problems with it in terms of the way it was implemented. But I will say this. When you pollute, you have to pay for it. And again, we have to recognize that there's a cost associated to our activities, whether you're a farmer or whoever else. I do this exercise with folks and say, look, how many of you want better services? Everyone raises their hand. How many of you want higher taxes? And no one raises their hand. The fact is, in some ways, taxes do pay for our services. Now, clearly, they should be good services. We need to make sure that we're spending the money in the right places. But again, there's a cost associated with these things. We can't say that the Chesapeake Bay is our highest priority and it's our greatest asset if we're not willing to protect it. Again, I think there may be some conversation about some of the funding mechanisms to doing so. But again, also, the Republicans were very good in terms of labeling the rain tax. It makes it very unpopular to say the rain tax. If you say stormwater management, people might think about it a little more, but rain tax was.
Democrats didn't care
awesome.
How much anything cost until we got a Republican governor.
You make a point,
Adam. You were going
to
say
because they didn't have to.
Adam and
One thing I was going to say to actually kind of echo what Catalina just said is like these issues are now all of a sudden partisan issues because we have a Republican government, And no one was talking about these issues when O'Malley was in office for 8 years straight and imposed taxes and did these things and did all this heavy-handed policymaking as the governor of Maryland. And so I feel like, generally speaking, it just seems like, to me, largely the Democratic Party's feelings are hurt, and that they want Larry Hogan to give, like, work with them, and he said he wants to work with the Democratic Party and he wants to work with folks in Maryland to make it a better state. But the general problem is that people need to stop. People need to uproot this from the partisan rhetoric and the demagoguery of the conversation. And we need to talk about what's good policy making. So, you know, if the rain tax is a bad policy for the state of Maryland, then it needs to be repealed. We shouldn't be talking about it like what Republicans want and the Democrats want. Like, these things are not, these things are mostly just about good policymaking issues. But no one was talking about it when Martin O'Malley was running the state of Maryland. So I feel like the general stream of the conversation needs to shift, and our political discourse needs to elevate so we can actually get good policies passed.
Well, we'll come back to this subject, and I think the stormwater runoff fees has been an interesting thing. We didn't talk about the fees in general and the 40 fees that the governor outlined and what they were, and next time we'll bring a list of those and what they really were. But we'll talk about all that. And stormwater fee, I think in some ways Greg Klein made a great deal of sense in that the way it was done was backwards. And the way I would have had it done is not the way Greg Klein would have had it done. But I think that we left out – people were upset because they had to pay money when none of the businesses had to pay money. The paving contractors, the people who made the houses, developers, it's always on the backs of citizens, never on the backs of anybody else. But anyway, this has been a really good discussion. I want to thank Greg Klein for coming once again. Always good to have you, Greg. Always.
I love to.
John Bullock, always good to have you in the studio.
Always good to be here.
Kathleen Bird, glad you were in the house today and were able to come in since you've got to record your No Hooks for the Hip Hop today.
Yeah, I do.
Good to have you here. And Adam Jackson, thanks for joining us by phone. I'm glad you could join us as well.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Good to have you here. We're going to take a very brief break. And on our way to break here, as you listen to the Mark Steiner Show, we are going to Crocodile Rock by Elton John, which went gold on this day in 1973.